This episode of Metatrex is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and to help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. Want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
There's no greater challenge than the study of philosophy.
My philosophy is that there is room for all philosophies on this station.
Well, welcome everyone to episode 76 of Metatrex, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. My name is Mike Morrison, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Zachary Frühling. Today, we're going to be discussing the fifth season of Voyager in our continuing series on essential Trek philosophy. Zach, how are you doing today?
Well, Mike, you and I have been doing Metatrex for almost 2 years now. We're creeping up on 2 years, but we are looking at 2 years of nearly total empty space ahead of us. So I'm trying not to let the everydayness, the ennui, the boredom of it all set.
Are you tipping your hand, Zachary?
It might be a nod to things to come.
Okay.
I've got some replicated curtains I hung up. I'm doing okay.
Well, that might be a good segue to explain for those who may be listening to us for the first time or haven't had an opportunity to hear one of our Essential Trek Philosophy episodes in the past. We can explain a little bit about it. Our Essential Trek Philosophy lists, a lot of the shows on Trek FM do essentials lists, but this is the only place where you're going to find essential lists based on philosophical content. So Zachary and I have gone through each of the series in reverse order. We started with the fourth season of Enterprise because that's the newest show, and we've worked our way backwards, and here we are on the fifth season of Star Trek Voyager. And Zachary, since you are the Star Trek Voyager guy, I know that this is going to be a really great discussion, and I know you're going to blow us all away with your insights on what qualifies as essential philosophy here from the fifth season of Voyager.
I was actually really surprised at how short my list ended up being. I know you said you had to whittle down your list before we got started here recording, but I started out with a pretty short list. And season 5 is actually one of my favorite seasons of Voyager altogether, if not one of my favorite seasons of Star Trek altogether. And I was really surprised at how short my list actually was. It's not because of a lack of anything interesting in season 5. In fact, some of my favorite episodes in Star Trek are in season 5. And there are a great many interesting ideas, concepts, ethical dilemmas, but I really had to take a razor to my choices here for what counted as essential Trek philosophy. The best of the best or the most essential things to watch if you're scouring all of Star Trek for philosophical concepts and topics.
We should go ahead and say, Zachary, that as we discuss these episodes, we move along here in the podcast, we're not going to be discussing them in any length or depth. We're simply going to be mentioning a little bit about what the episode touched on as it refers to the philosophical content. So if you want to listen to an in-depth discussion about a particular philosophical idea, or occasionally we will hear on Metatrex take on an episode of Star Trek and talk about it exclusively. Occasionally we examine species within the Star Trek universe or concepts, but not here on Essential Trek Philosophy. We're just going to be looking at an entire season of Star Trek and just making some distinctions within that season, what interests us as far as the philosophical content of particular episodes within the season. We're going to compile those and make a list. At the end of the episode, we'll go down through our essential Trek philosophy list for the fifth season of Voyager and let you, the listener, take it from there.
Yes, the vast majority of our Metatrix episodes are in-depth discussions about all kinds of philosophical topics and ideas in the Star Trek universe. But every fourth episode of Metatrix, we thought it would be useful to give a survey, an overview of each season of Star Trek as a whole. If you're looking for just the highlights, where you should go if you're looking for the most philosophically interesting content in all of Star Trek.
So, Zachary, before we dive in and start disseminating our lists, do you have any initial thoughts on season 5 of Star Trek Voyager in its entirety?
Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, my list is actually pretty short. I had a hard time finding a large number of episodes from season 5 of Voyager that I would consider essential Trek philosophy. Like, out of all of Star Trek, you have to watch this if you're looking for essential Trek philosophy. On the other hand, season 5 of Voyager is one of my favorite seasons, but largely because of the character interaction. I think in season 5 of Voyager, you can tell that the actors have all become very comfortable with their characters. Character development is being fleshed out, and it's one of the most humorous, fun, casual, just outright enjoyable seasons of Star Trek for me. But again, it's not because of the philosophical content. You know, we're going to talk about some great philosophically rich episodes here in this episode of Metatrex. But that's not really why I like the season. I like the season largely for the characters.
Zachary, you and I agree on a lot of things, but I have to say that I couldn't disagree more. This is not one of my favorite seasons of Star Trek.
Really?
No, it really isn't. And I'm not going to say that I hate it, but there are more episodes within this season. I feel strange saying that because I started out with a list of 10 episodes. And I have to say also that not all of those episodes are episodes that I care for, but I couldn't really find fault with the philosophical content that's within them. But there are a lot of episodes in this season that I truly, truly, truly dislike. There are a few episodes in this season that are favorites of mine. There's even one or two that I'd have to say would probably make my top 50 list. But the season as a whole seems to me very disjointed, and it occurs to me that there's a lot of ethical dilemmas that play and replay themselves out throughout this season. So I feel like I'm getting sort of the same story, the same ethical dilemma, just kind of regurgitated. And
I think that's maybe why, even though there are some interesting ethical dilemmas in this season, I feel like that's why they don't make my list of essential Trek philosophy. In many cases, the interesting philosophical episodes in the season are kind of rehashes of stuff we've seen fleshed out better in other seasons or other episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, not one of my favorite seasons of Star Trek, but
you're just wrong.
There's definitely some good stuff in here. And again, I had a list of 10 episodes. I whittled that down to 7, literally right before we hit the record button on this podcast. I whittled 2 more off, so I've got 3 essential Trek philosophy picks and 2 honorable mentions. And before we dive in, I should say that I haven't shared my list with you. You haven't shared your list with me. We may have episodes that we agree on and they've made both of our lists. We may have 2 completely different lists. We have no idea. So this is as surprising to us as it is to our listeners. Hopefully, at the end of the podcast, we will come up with some kind of cohesive list of outstanding episodes based on interesting philosophical concepts that our listeners can take. And if they're really wanting to do kind of an ethical deep dive or a philosophical deep dive into Star Trek Voyager, they'll have a list for season 5 to help guide them along the way. That way they don't get caught in the dark outer reaches of the Delta Quadrant trying to find interesting stuff to see in Star Trek. So, Zachary, shall we dive in?
Okay, well, I already tipped my hand about my first pick. My first pick is actually the season opener, Night. And this is one of my favorite episodes in all of Voyager. It's just so interesting to see the Voyager crew with nothing to do. And so much of our day-to-day lives are busyness, the everydayness. You know, you get up, you go to work, you're busy, you've got stuff you got to do. When you get home, you're worrying about what to do the next day. And that's day-to-day life for most of us. And in the episode Night, we get to see the boredom of having nothing to do, really the potential meaninglessness of life when you strip away all of the busyness and strip away all the things you have to do. You know, we get to see Harry Kim, you know, working on a clarinet piece. We get to see Tom Paris playing Captain Proton in the holodeck. We get to see Captain Janeway stewing in her quarters, feeling guilty about the decision she made that stranded Voyager. And I think most of us kind of run away from the potential meaninglessness and the potential boredom of life. We keep ourselves busy and we keep ourselves distracted. And when you strip away all of that, you start to question, like, what does it all mean? What are we doing here? What's our purpose? You know, how can I find meaning in this potentially meaningless existence? And it's just fun to see the Voyager crew kind of distract themselves from that. And I really like Neelix's reaction, like, you know, oh my God, I can't look out the window at this pure blackness anymore. I need my bergamot tea and my replicated curtains. And I think for me, I actually experience this. Like, if I don't keep myself really busy, I tend to kind of get like Neelix. I get a little panicky. I get a little nervous. Like, something's not quite right. Something's wrong. And the weight of that starts to dwell on me. And like Captain Janeway, I can experience, you know, letting my mind kind of dwell on previous bad decisions I've made or bad things I've done, or, you know, the guilt of life, just kind of the weight of all the previous things in the past can kind of pile up on you if you really, you know, don't have anything else to do. So I can kind of relate to all the characters inside this episode. And I think, you know, we kind of don't take enough time to dwell on those moments. You know, we keep ourselves so busy in this modern world. I mean, even our off work hours are filled with, you know, podcasting and, you know, social media, and we're always busy. And, you know, having nothing to do, like going camping, like getting out in the woods, like literally just separating yourself from all the business can force you to really be reflective about what it all means. And I like that we can see Captain Janeway really forced to think about the hard decisions she's had to make and the consequences that came from that, when there's nothing else to distract her from it. She has nothing but her own thoughts and the blackness out the windows of her quarters to keep herself occupied. And it's fun to see, you know, Chakotay kind of drag her out of it, because when I've experienced times like this, I've needed a friend to kind of grab me and say, we're going to do something fun and you're going to love it. And that often takes, you know, another person to kind of drag you out of those kinds of moments. I wouldn't even call it a depression. That's not quite the right term, I think. I think it's, you know, when your mind is stripped of all the busyness, you start to dwell and reflect, and, you know, and that can kind of lead you down a path that's not a joyful path. And I think we get to see all of the characters inside Voyager one by one kind of going down a path that's, you know, it's busy. They're trying to keep themselves amused. You know, Harry Kim is having some fun with this concerto, and, you know, Tom Paris is distracting himself on the holodeck, but they're not really doing anything I would call radically meaningful compared to the overall mission of Voyager.
This episode did not end up on my list at all. And honestly, I really appreciate your observations about it. But my personal favorite part of this episode is this is the introduction of a series of episodes in which Captain Proton is kind of involved there.
Just to be clear, I didn't put it on my list because of Captain Proton, but I think you will not find a better example of the French concept of ennui or everydayness or boredom in all of Star Trek.
Yeah.
That's better than this episode.
Yeah, yeah. But I have to say that I'm a fan of the Captain Proton, and I think there's a lot of allegory. I think there's a lot of...
Well, this is also Voyager poking fun at itself. Like, look at how the 20th century perceived the future. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can say that about all of Star Trek, right? Look how ridiculous it is that in the 20th century they came up with this crazy thing called Star Trek, and look how they thought the future would be. You know, and of course, here in the real world, you know, Star Trek did predict a great many things that we have as part of our reality now, especially with mobile communications and whatnot. And information access. But generally, you know, I think we can safely say that the future will be different than what we see in the Star Trek universe in some way. And you know, in 200 years or 300 years, they might look back at, you know, what we think of as the future now and kind of laugh at ourselves. Like, that's what we thought the future would be in the 20th century, now 21st century.
Yeah, so we have Night, we have 30 Days, we have Bride of Chaotica, we have Shattered. Those are the episodes in which Captain Proton and this holodeck program make some kind of entrance into the episode. And there's also a reference to a movie that they're going to watch on the cruise movie night, Bride of Chaotica. So, and the fun of that is, and those of you out there who grew up on science fiction television, for me it was in the 70s watching reruns of Flash Gordon and all of those great old black and white, you know, kind of the day the earth stood still, and you know, all of these great old science fiction films. This is really Brandon Braga's tip of his cap to all of those great old science fiction programs from the, you know, the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And I love that about it. But as far as the episode itself, I really appreciate, you know, the stillness of the dilemma that they're in. They're kind of in this expanse. They're bored. They're forced to be alone with their, maybe for me, it hits too close to home. I don't know, because I don't like to have too much time, Zachary, to sit and contemplate, because I do sometimes end up second guessing my decisions. But that
second guess your whole life if you let yourself.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, that's not good. Absolutely. And honestly, that is a recurring theme, I think, in this season, is this kind of idea of second guessing your choices and your decisions. And in fact, it pops up on one of my picks as being, you know, a real part of honestly what I like about the episode. Again, I'm back to this idea that I feel like some of these ethical dilemmas are and some of these themes are regurgitated over and over and over again throughout the season, and just repackaged and presented to us in a new way. And I just feel like, for me at least, that there are episodes that do it a little bit better than others. I like this episode, but it didn't make my list. I thought what you had to say though was very interesting.
Well, I think it's part of the phenomenology of life, right? You know, we do experience this mode from time to time, and it's something that philosophers tend to ignore. You know, psychologists probably pay more attention to it. Sociologists might pay more attention to it. But philosophers, I think, tend to ignore the fact that this is one mode of our existence, that sometimes we experience boredom. Like on a Friday night, I might sit around, like if I'm here at the house by myself, I might be like, huh, okay, it's 5 p.m. on a Friday. I'm done with my work. What am I going to do? I don't know. Maybe I'll order a pizza. Maybe I'll watch an episode of Star Trek. Maybe I'll put a movie on. Maybe I'll go for a walk. It's like, maybe I'll go play Captain Proton on the holodeck. You know, I'm not in that mode all the time, but there are definite moments where I experience either that kind of like, I think I'll just find something to occupy my time, like Harry Kim and Tom Paris are doing, or I'll be like Captain Janeway and just sort of start reflecting, and it'll be introspective. And, you know, that can either be a positive thing or a negative thing. And, you know, I've experienced these moments. And then before you know it, reality kicks back in. You got something to do on the weekend, or you're back to work on Monday, and you're back in you know, day-to-day busyness. But those periods of business are punctuated by these periods of time where it's like, wow, I don't know what to do with myself. It's like, I've got no plans, nothing I have to do, no obvious meaning to my day, and I've got to find some way to fill my time. And it's and thinking of 2 years of doing that, you know, when the Voyager crew are looking at 2 full years of nothing to do because there's total emptiness for 2 years ahead in space. And it's a good thing they find a way out of the situation at the end of the episode. But can you imagine 2 years of living in that day-to-day ennui or boredom or everydayness?
Yeah, I can't imagine. But, you know, the interesting thing to me about the episode is that the monotony of their boredom gets broken up.
Well, finally, Captain Janeway's like, thank God I got to pick up a phaser rifle. I need to shoot something, get over this.
But again, to me, that's almost hitting a little too close to home, because sometimes the monotony of our boredom gets broken up by a problem. And it's funny how one dilemma can suddenly not matter anymore because of a bigger dilemma. And that's...
Well, I think for problem-solving-minded people, you know, philosophers or creative people or people who work in technology, anyone who's actively working at solving problems day in, day out, I think that kind of perspective results in what I would call the problemization of the world around us. We start to see problems to solve everywhere, because that's better than not having a problem to solve.
Well, and again, the problem to solve is to break up the monotony of boredom, because in that boredom they find themselves second guessing. And that happens to be kind of the theme and dilemma that we find in my first pick, which is the episode Timeless.
Oh, man, that is one of my favorite episodes of Voyager altogether, and I could not bring myself to put it on my list. So I'm curious what you found in Timeless that makes it worthy of being considered essential Trek philosophy.
Well, I'll give you one, Zachary. They were there to change history. Taking a quote right from the episode. For me, it's a very similar dilemma that we find in the episode Night. Yeah, the dilemma here isn't the boredom of life and second-guessing, and at least in Captain Janeway's mind, in Night, she's second-guessing every command decision she's probably ever made, starting with, her decision to, destroy the array. Here, it's a miscalculation. It's a screw-up, honestly, that Harry Kim makes. One of the few mistakes I think we ever see Harry Kim make in Voyager, but this was a doozy, and that mistake cost the lives of everyone on Voyager, save himself and Chakotay. And so Chakotay and Kim, along with the Doctor, find themselves the galaxy's most wanted. They are wanted by the Federation. They steal the Delta Flyer, and they have committed treason. They've conspired to violate the Temporal Prime Directive, and they are going to change history. And I love the dialogue in this episode. I think, as far as the writing's concerned, it was smart.
I like the bravado of it in that episode, because what we see is a very risky attempt to tempt fate and think big and shoot for the impossible and against all odds. And we see, Harry and Chakotay going for it, trying to tempt fate together and revive their long lost comrades against all odds. It's kind of a crazy idea what they're trying to pull off in this episode, and just the chutzpah and the audacity of trying to send a message to the past to rewrite history and save their long dead comrades. It's kind of a crazy idea, and they're trying to pull off the impossible. And I really like that kind of attempt to take fate in their own hands and change all of their destinies for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the bravado of this. And quite frankly, it speaks to something that I find really, really interesting. And that is this idea, Zachary, that if you had an opportunity to change a decision that you've made, to somehow affect your present in some way, to go back in time or... And I write about this as a fiction writer. This is really something that my novel that I just wrote, Hannah Goodhart and The Guardian of Time, is kind of about that. And the follow-up to it, The Secret of Erebos, my protagonist in that book, she's faced with that kind of dilemma. If I have an opportunity to change history, what would I do? And that's what is going on with Harry Kim. He's messed up, and he has carried the guilt and the weight of his error for his entire life. And he's been given the opportunity, the power to somehow change it, or hopefully change it. He's not even sure. He's taking a risk, by doing it, and he's breaking laws, and they're fugitives, but he's willing to go through all of that to save the lives of the crew, to change that moment in history and hopefully the outcome, so that they can. He made it home, but his crew didn't. And I like you. I love the bravado of this. I love how bold it is in kind of dealing with that whole idea of, if I had an opportunity to change something, what would I do?
Well, I think if my first pick, Night, was a good example of what life is sometimes like, I think this episode, Timeless, is an example of what life is never like. Who amongst us has not made a bad decision that has resulted in someone else getting hurt in some way? And good people fundamentally feel guilty about that. And we can see Harry Kim has this weight of guilt, 15 years of guilt resting on his shoulders, yes. Right? His friends and comrades were killed because he made a mistake in a calculation and screwed up. And he's, experiencing the guilt of that for 15 years. And, here in the real world, when we make bad decisions and hurt people, we kind of have to live with it. We very seldom get the chance to undo that kind of damage. But it's fun to see Harry Kim be a good enough person where, you know, not he doesn't just let the guilt eat away at him. He's like, I'm going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And if that means, you know, risking the, you know, the state of the present for the benefit of trying to send a message to the past and rewrite history and undo the last 15 years, if I can find a way to pull that off, I'm going to do it. And it's, I do like the bravado of it, but I think it shows that Harry is fundamentally a good person. You know, he experiences guilt like anyone does when they make bad decisions, but he doesn't let that guilt eat him up to the point where he throws his whole life away. He is taking kind of a leap of faith to make the situation better. And I think that just shows that he's a fundamentally pure, good person, even though he makes mistakes like all of us do.
Yeah. And one of the things that I really love about this is this fundamentally good person. I don't think there's anybody out there listening to this podcast that's going to disagree with that statement, Zachary. Harry Kim is a good person. The moment that we meet him, the very first time we meet him way back in season one, in the very first episode, I think, you know, he's this young cadet right out of the Academy, and this is his first, you know, his first assignment, and he's young and he's eager, and he continues to be that young, eager, fresh face on Voyager. He's essentially a good person, and that mistake did something to him, and he's willing to break out of the character mold that we're used to seeing him in. Harry Kim that we got to know during the first, you know, four seasons of Voyager probably would never make the choices that he's making inside this episode. But it's the guilt and the weight. I mean, there's a line in there where the doctor says, you know, hey, at least you weren't buried under 20 meters of ice. And Harry Kim says to him, you don't know how many times I wish I was. And I seriously doubt that anyone listening to this podcast is going to be able to relate to the idea of making a mistake that cost 150 lives. And I have to ask myself the question that if I were in a position like Harry, would I be willing to do really some unseemly things and make some what honestly are questionable choices in order to fulfill the goodness that is, at least for Harry Kim, in his heart. I mean, he is essentially a good person, and he's doing some really bad things in order to fulfill that goodness that's within him. Chakotay says, you know, we're here to save 150 lives, our crew. And, you know, Chakotay tells LaForge, you know, if we succeed, we're going to save those lives. And that's the risk that Chakotay and Harry Kim are willing to make. And I think it speaks to, honestly, the goodness that's in both of them.
Well, you could characterize the dilemma in this episode as kind of a classic utilitarian numbers game of sacrificing the billions of people who live in the present and the last 15 years of their lives and all the life and death consequences that have happened in the last 15 years for the sake of a smaller number of people, 150 particular people on Voyager, and weighing the special relationship that Harry Kim has to his comrades and friends back on Voyager versus his moral responsibility to the rest of the people in the Federation or in the galaxy. Even you can, you know, make it writ as large as you like. But basically, you know, you can kind of juxtapose you can juxtapose Harry Kim's moral responsibility to everyone in the present versus his special responsibility and loyalty to his 150 friends who passed away on Voyager.
Yeah, it's not like a trolley problem.
It is. I mean, it is a trolley problem.
I suppose it is to some degree.
But yeah, it's billions of people, you know, around the Federation and around the Alpha and Delta quadrants, you know, whoever's lives have been affected over the last 15 years by everything Voyager had done. Versus 150, a smaller number of people back on Voyager. So I think you can actually absolutely characterize this as a form of a trolley problem.
Yeah. Okay. I was.
It's the Delta Flyer problem.
It's the Delta Flyer problem. Indeed it is. And for the record, we found out that Seven's translink frequency is 108.442.36000.
Oh, well, I'm going to tune that in on my space ham radio right now. see what kind of Borg I can contact.
So Zachary, very similar problems in terms of second guessing one's choices and decisions in life, and two completely different ways of dealing with that problem and telling that story.
Well, I think this is just such a valuable takeaway about human nature in general. Good, competent officers make mistakes sometimes. Harry Kim is a good, competent. He's the poster child for a good ensign, right? And he makes a mistake that kills 150 people. You know, here in the real world, good people do bad things and they make bad decisions that hurt other people. And that does not make them fundamentally bad people. Just like making a mistake doesn't fundamentally make Harry Kim a bad officer. I think I'm constantly surprised at how easily we forget that good people do bad things. I think this episode can be a reminder that a good officer can make a really terrible decision or make a terrible mistake. And here in the real world, people who are fundamentally good people can still do really stupid things.
So Zachary, what is next on your list?
Okay, so my next episode is Drone.
Okay.
The very next episode, following Night. And in this episode, if you remember, we get to see a souped-up 29th century Borg as a result of some transporter accident that fused the Doctor's hollow emitter with some of Seven of Nine's nanoprobes and resulted in a 29th century version of a Borg maturation chamber. And a souped-up super Borg who was referred to as One inside the episode. And there's only a small part of this episode that I think counts as essential Trek philosophy, but I think the beginning of the episode, when they first realize that a souped-up 29th century Borg baby is being incubated inside the science lab on Voyager, they have to make a decision. Do we let this Borg baby reach maturity, or do we terminate its life now? It reminds me of these kind of classic science fiction moral dilemmas where it's like, suppose you could go back in time and you could kill Hitler as an infant to save the lives of millions of Jewish people as a result, you know, in the Holocaust. Would that be the right thing to do? And Captain Janeway really has to kind of make a decision. You know, do I let this Borg baby grow to reach maturity, given all the danger and the potential bad things that it could cause here on Voyager, the harm that it could do? Do I be proactive to prevent that potential harm, or do I take a risk and trust the potential of that new life form, however threatening it might be, because it's fundamentally a Borg, however threatening that new life form might be to us, do we trust that it still has potential to become a valuable member of the crew, just like Seven of Nine has, or do I sort of do a preemptive Borg baby strike and take out the potentially dangerous Borg baby before it can assimilate anyone on Voyager? So I like the moral dilemma, and Captain Janeway refers to that dilemma as murder inside the episode. She says, "I don't want to give the order of murder," essentially, when she's discussing the situation with Seven of Nine. And she seems to have clearly placed that in the murder category. But, you know, you could plausibly say that if you could go back in time and you could take out Hitler earlier before the Holocaust and save millions of lives, then that's probably the right thing to do, especially from a utilitarian standpoint, right? And a greater number of people versus a smaller number of people. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, that kind of Vulcan utilitarian take on the situation. But Captain Janeway doesn't think of the situation that way. She thinks of it in terms of terminating another life as being a form of murder. You could possibly characterize this as kind of an abortion analogy, although I think that's probably less more of a tenuous connection than the killing Hitler connection, given the fact that this new life form is a potential threat, an outright threat, because it's a Borg.
Yeah, this was actually when I mentioned that I originally had a list of 10 episodes, and this was one of the first three that I whittled off of my list, because, like you, it's just this small thread at the beginning of the episode, this ethical dilemma that they have, this question of whether or not they should allow this Borg infant to maturate and become, you know, a full-grown adult Borg. On another note, as far as the episode's concerned, I have to say that this is one of my favorite episodes from this season.
Really? It's one of my least favorite. That's so interesting.
I really love Paul Bomer's portrayal of this Borg One in this episode. He's such a versatile character actor. We actually see him in a lot of episodes of Voyager. He plays a Nazi. He's such a versatile guy. He was in Carbon Creek on Enterprise. He's popped up around the Star Trek universe a number of times. And I just think he's such a versatile actor, and he did such a great job portraying this Borg. And at the end of the episode, I'm going to spoil it, you know, at the end of the episode, when he sacrifices himself, he just, it was such an emotional ending to this episode, and not for any deep reason or philosophical reason. I just like this episode. I think that Jeri Ryan gave a great performance in this episode. It's one of those ones that if I really want an episode of Star Trek that appeals to me on an emotional level, this is one of them. And I just have a great appreciation for it, but not for any deep philosophical reason.
Well, the Borg One's character arc is moving in the same way that Data's character arc is moving, right? The way Data sacrifices himself at the end of Nemesis. It's almost like it took all of Data's character arc and compressed it down into this episode.
Yeah.
Well, of course, this was before Nemesis, but... So, you know, it's not like they ripped this off from the Next Generation, but I think, you know, the extent to which this character arc in this episode of One is moving, it's moving for the same reason that Data's character arc is moving. We get to see an innocent new life form that doesn't have a firm sense of identity, grows to become a useful part of the crew, ends up making a self-sacrificing decision at the end of the arc, and that's fundamentally a moving story, no matter what situation it comes up in. But it's so brief, and frankly, you know, as much as I do like the acting in this episode, I find the performance of One a little stilted. It's very robotic. You know, his movements are jerky and Borg-like, and it is a fun episode, but it's not an episode I come back to again and again and again. My favorite part of the episode, while we're just shooting the breeze about the episode, is when One calls B'Elanna volatile.
Yes.
By repeating the definition of volatile to her. she just gives this eye roll that is just so classic B'Elanna.
Yes. Absolutely. 100 times yes. So Zachary, next on my list is the episode 30 Days.
I knew you were going to pick that one. We've talked a lot about 30 Days.
How is it that you knew I'd pick it? I have to ask.
I just know you. I've known you for a couple of years now. We do this every week. I know you.
Because I did peel a couple off of my list because we've talked a lot about them on Metatrax. I whittled a few episodes from season 5 off my list. We've discussed them in depth in other episodes of Metatrex, so I just took them off. But I left 30 Days on here because, again, there is this regurgitation. I keep using that word because it's the same ethical dilemma over and over and over again. And some episodes do it justice and others are dull, but 30 Days, very interesting for me. And that is the fact that Tom Paris has to make a choice. And the choice is he going to do the wrong thing for the right reason? He's breaking orders, and if he were any other Starfleet officer, he'd be putting his career at risk, but he's not. It seems like he's risking...
Someone still has to fly the ship.
Yeah, somebody still has to fly the ship. But Tom has worked hard over the last 4 years to redeem his reputation. And I think he realizes in this episode, and it's the beautiful thing about this episode, as he's writing this letter to his father... Tom tells this story of the events that led up to him spending 30 days in Voyager's brig. And at the end of the episode, we find out that, he violated the prime directive. He violated his orders, and it cost him. What are we willing to sacrifice in order to do the right thing sometimes in life? And that's this ethical dilemma that Tom has. And as he's sitting there spending 30 days in the brig, having this opportunity to rethink his actions and to reconsider his actions, I love it that as he's writing this letter to his dad, he comes to the conclusion that, you know what, I know I soiled my reputation, and it cost me a pip on my collar and 30 days in the brig and a little bit of self-respect and a little bit of respect, but it was completely worth it, and I did the right thing.
I think what's amazing about that whole situation, though, is even though all those things are true, he has done something technically bad, he's being punished by Captain Janeway, he's being incarcerated for 30 days, he has succeeded in turning his overall life around. He has developed good relationships with the people on Voyager. He is a good officer, even despite the fact that he made the wrong decision, quote-unquote. And at the end of the day, even though he's demoted, he goes back to work on Voyager, and he's still friends with everyone on board. And he has essentially succeeded in obtaining a more meaningful life even though he's, again, made, quote unquote, a bad decision or a wrong decision or a disapproved of decision in this episode. So it shows genuine character growth compared to the Tom Paris we see at the beginning of Voyager.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I'm a dialogue guy, and I love the dialogue in this. I love the little scene that Paris has with Neelix inside this episode when Neelix brings his dinner to him, and it's a little bit of an awkward moment.
Bread and water?
Yeah, bread. He asked Neelix, you know, did you have a chance to ask, I think he referred to Captain Janeway as the warden, about getting some holodeck privileges. And, you know, Neelix is real uncomfortable, and he kind of does a little bit of a Janeway impersonation. She said, and I quote, "Tell Mr. Paris this is punishment and not shore leave." And Tom says, "Well, it was worth a try."
You know, it's interesting because I wonder if the fact that Voyager is stranded in the Delta Quadrant off by themselves, does that reduce the seriousness of what's going on here? Like, if they were back in the Federation, he was back in the penal colony, that's a serious thing, right? Mm-hmm. But here it's like, okay, I get to be in the brig on Voyager for 30 days. Oh, please, we're still stuck in the Delta Quadrant. How serious can I take this, right? So does the banter drive home the fact that this is just not as serious as it probably should be if they were back in the Alpha Quadrant?
The banter doesn't spoil it for me because it's the monotony of going back. And, you know, at the end of the episode, they come and he looks terrible. And you can tell just by his looks, by his demeanor, that that it's been difficult. In fact, he says, you know, do the words cruel and unusual mean anything to her? I mean, he's not having a good time. And in the midst of all of this, he's having to do the difficult thing and sit down. And even though he's not sure that his father will ever have the opportunity to read the letter, you know, he feels the need to kind of unburden himself and write an honest letter to his father about how he's changed since he last seen his father. "Yeah, Dad, I'm in trouble again. But here's why I'm in trouble, and it's for all the right reasons." And I love this episode. It's endearing in a lot of ways, and I think that ethical dilemma of doing the wrong thing for all the right reasons and having to rethink and rehash and reconsider. Again, some of the episodes inside this season do it better than others, and I think this was just on point in every way. What?
I think anyone who is self-aware and a critical thinker has to be willing to say, "I know I'm supposed to follow the rules, but this rule is stupid." So yeah. I disagree with that. I think it's a bad rule. I think it's wrong. And so I'm going to do the right thing. And even though there are usually consequences when you do that, I think it shows a level of awareness. And it doesn't even have to be moral thinking necessarily. In this case, it's a moral dilemma of some sort. But I think... you know, being willing to stand up and say, "I think this is the wrong way to think about this. I think this rule is terrible. We should do something different in this particular instance for blah, blah, blah reasons," shows genuine awareness and moral awareness and genuine critical thinking. It shows how complex Tom has really become.
Yeah, and it's the complexity of his character inside this episode that I really like, because honestly, there are times when Tom's character is a little cartoonish, if I can use that word.
Yes, tomfoolery.
Tomfoolery. That's exactly right. And in reality, I think that, you know, Tom comes from a penal colony. He's a bit of a rebel. He's complicated. He has a complicated past. He's, you know, and so when I see that lighthearted writing of his character, it just doesn't really appeal to me in any great way. And I love episodes when we get to see a much richer, fuller kind of portrayal of Tom Paris. And this is one of those episodes that we get to see his, you know, his little banter and his, you know, his sarcasm. But we get to see that he's complicated and that he is, yes, a critical thinker. I think you're absolutely right there. And isn't that life? I mean, the choices that we make in life, they're not always black and white. And this is one of those beautiful episodes, I think, that really paints a picture of sometimes how gray decisions will be. And I'm going to let the rebel in me come out a little bit. I'd have to say that, you know, throughout our history here in this world, I think sometimes the greatest moments in our history that have been just altering to the trajectory of time have been in those moments where good people did the wrong things for the right reasons.
How do you think that being part of a command structure affects that moral situation? Like, all of us have laws and rules that we have to obey, and when we think those are wrong, we sometimes stand up to them. But Starfleet officers have all voluntarily chosen to obey the command structure, right? They have sworn to obey their commanding officer, essentially, and the commanding officer above that. And even if they disagree with a command decision, they have sworn an oath to abide by that structure and basically abide by the decisions, whether or not they agree with it, for moral reasons or otherwise, right? Does that affect how we should view the rightness or wrongness of, quote-unquote, breaking the rules? Because really, it's not just a matter of breaking the rule, it's a matter of breaking your own oath at that point as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to say, Zachary, that I did ponder that point as I was compiling my list, because, honestly, the writers had a decision to make in writing this episode, and that's who's going to be the character to break the rules. And they have a lot of really good choices. I mean, you think about it, you know,
Harry, I could see a great episode with Harry deciding to break the rules. That'd be out of character for Harry.
Yeah. And frankly, we see an episode inside this season where Harry becomes the rule breaker. And frankly, Janeway says, "I'm shocked, because if it were anybody else on my crew, I would have expected this, but not from you, Harry." And that's the episode,
like, thanks a lot.
The Disease.
Glad to know you view me as an 8-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the episode, The Disease, if anybody's curious. You know, Harry becomes a bit of a rebel inside that episode. And but you think about it, Torres, any of the Maquis crewmen, I mean, even Chakotay, for Pete's sake, they could have chosen any, just virtually any of the Maquis characters on this show to be this character who broke the rules, who broke command and the command structure, who disobeyed Janeway's orders, who violated the Prime Directive, and they would have been fine. But the fact that they used Tom Paris, and they used it to demonstrate that he's thinking critically about these moral choices that pop up in life, and that it doesn't come easily for him to break the rules anymore, I think that's what's fascinating, and that's where we see the real character growth.
Well, I think one of the most valuable things people in general can learn is that, yes, we live in a society with laws and rules and standards of behavior and whatnot, but all of those things were generally conceived of by someone who came before you, and that doesn't mean they're necessarily right. Right? So being able to think critically about any particular situation that comes up versus just relying on this rule that's already exists. What you don't want to be is a blind rule follower, right? That's not going to result in moral behavior all the time. It might result in predictable behavior, right? But it won't result in genuine critical thinking and genuine situational awareness. Picard says as much in an episode of The Next Generation, that Starfleet doesn't want a bunch of rule followers. It wants people who can analyze the situation and take judicious action in light of all the things that are unique to that situation. And, you know, if you're just a blind rule follower, you might get very predictable behavior, but you're not going to be terribly self-aware. And occasionally, those rules are not going to apply, and you'll end up making worse decisions as a result.
Yeah. One final note, Zachary, about this episode. This is, as I mentioned earlier, another one of those Captain Proton episodes. And I think the writers did something really clever inside this episode with the whole Captain Proton shtick. And that is a real nod to, I think, what Star Trek is for me as a fan and what I think Star Trek is for a lot of people as fans. And that is revealed in a conversation that he has with B'Elanna when they are kind of talking through the situation that they're in. And Tom says to B'Elanna, "Well, Captain Proton's not going to be able to save the day this time, is he?" And B'Elanna says to him, "What about Tom Paris?" And I love how Tom is able to draw from his interest in Captain Proton and the fun that he has in participating in this holodeck program and this character, and how that character informs his own decision-making and inspires him in some way. And as a fan, I am oftentimes inspired by what I see in Star Trek, and it challenges my own thinking. It stirs ideas and curiosities in me, and occasionally informs some of the choices that I make in my own life. And I think it's a beautiful way for art to imitate life, and I love the way they used Captain Proton in this episode.
Well, this is the reason that we study history, the great figures of history with mm-hmm. great dilemmas and great decisions, and this is the reason that we enjoy and thrive on great literature and watching great science fiction, great characters, in other words, right, who are faced with great decisions and make great actions in response to those decisions. It's because they give us models to emulate or models to strive for when we're faced with similar situations. Like, you can imagine a difficult situation here in the real world where you're smack in the middle of a difficult dilemma or a difficult struggle, and you're like, this is a Captain Kirk staring down a Klingon warship kind of moment, right? That's why we look to the great figures. It's like you can make these analogies. Or like, this is Caesar trying to take Rome, right? these are great figures with great decisions. And I think we need those models, right? We need the confidence to say, I'm going to make a difficult decision because people before me have done it, or people I admire in a fictional world have acted in this way, and I want to be more like that. And without those models, I think we would struggle to find the confidence it takes to make difficult decisions.
So, Zachary, that was the episode 30 Days. That was on my list, but not on yours. What's next on your list?
So I picked Nothing Human.
Ah.
And you probably could have predicted that I would pick this one.
Yes, and frankly, that was the one that I trimmed off my list simply because we've talked about it a number of times on Metatrex.
We have. And if you remember, this is the episode where, you know, some strange space alien life form has attached itself to B'Elanna. And in order to find a solution to this dilemma, how to separate this life form from B'Elanna's throat, essentially, mm-hmm. the doctor seeks the help of a hologram of Krell Maset, who is a Cardassian doctor who had performed some morally questionable experiments. But they need the help of this holographic doctor to resolve this dilemma. And I think this episode is fascinating. I really do. I think you won't find almost a better episode about medical ethics in Star Trek.
I agree.
Because it raises the whole notion of tainted knowledge. The idea that the way in which knowledge is produced, the way research is conducted, the types of experiments you do, the moral situation surrounding that research affects whether or not that knowledge is quote unquote safe to use or appropriate to use or right to use. Mm-hmm. And I think that sounds so obvious, like, well, yeah, if you're doing these terrible experiments on animals or humans and that's resulting in this knowledge, we don't want to encourage that behavior because that would encourage future morally questionable research, which we want to discourage, right? On the other hand, you can say, well, once the knowledge has been produced, then why not use it, right? If we can save someone else's life with this knowledge, however that knowledge came into being, then saving someone's life is the right thing to do. So the whole notion of tainted knowledge is an interesting, almost specious concept to me. Like, how can a piece of knowledge be tainted? Like, why should the origin of that knowledge affect whether that knowledge is correct to use here in the moment when we can save people's lives with it? On the other hand, I think, you know, we definitely want to discourage immoral research, right? We don't want people doing morally questionable experiments on people or animals or whatnot. And, you know, how do you balance keeping your research morally on the up and up versus producing genuine knowledge that's genuinely helpful? Because you often don't produce that kind of scientific medical knowledge without causing harm to some sort of being. You harm animals or you harm people, and in doing that, you learn something in the process, and we can cause a greater good. In fact, all these dilemmas you can kind of characterize in a utilitarian way. Like, you know, if you can help a greater number of people by harming a small number of people in this research or a small number of animals in this research, isn't that the right thing to do from a utilitarian standpoint? On the other hand, we don't want to encourage that kind of research and that kind of behavior from scientists and researchers. So, again, it's a dilemma for a reason, right? These are actual, you know, issues in medical ethics and medical research and scientific research here in the real world. And there's no easy resolution because the cold, hard reality is that to do experiments that produce in genuine knowledge in certain fields of medicine, you end up unfortunately having to cause harm to some living beings in the process. And that's an unfortunate reality of how knowledge is sometimes produced. And so in general, I just think you won't find a better medical ethics and medical research ethics episode in all of Star Trek than this episode. So I definitely consider this episode to be essential Trek philosophy if you're even remotely interested in medical ethics.
So here's my confession. I couldn't agree more. This is essential Trek philosophy. In fact, it was really difficult for me to take it off of my list because I think within the fifth season of Star Trek Voyager, I think this is the most philosophically rich episode in the season. Completely my opinion. But I knew that you would have it on your list. I knew there was no way in the world that that was not going to be on your list. And as I mentioned before, we talk about this episode in a great deal of depth in, I believe it is episode 51 of Metatreks, entitled Dr. Mora's Jellymold, in which we talk about scientific and medical ethics. So you'll find a pretty in-depth conversation about Krell-Moset and Nothing Human inside that episode of Metatreks.
I think you're right. Of the episodes on my list, this is the most essential episode of Essential Trek Philosophy in season 5.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In fact, I would definitely move it to number one. I think it should be first on our list, honestly. Nothing Human.
I think it's interesting, Mike, because almost all of these moral dilemmas you get in Star Trek, you can characterize as basically a different flavor of the same dilemma. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to harm a small number of people to benefit a larger number of right. people? And you can run the utilitarian perspective. You can run the perspective of Kantian deontological ethics about rights and respecting other people's autonomy. And you can take the virtue ethics perspective or the perspective of friendship. We talked about Harry's special relationship to the crew on Voyager, and that somehow justifies sacrificing the great number of people in the present to save people in the past. And you can basically take that perspective on any one of these dilemmas that we've talked about in any episode of Star Trek with a moral dilemma. So for me, there's a danger as we continue to do these episodes of Essential Trek Philosophy of rehashing the same approach to these dilemmas every time, because they are all different varieties of the same flavor of mm-hmm. ethical dilemmas, you know, in broad brushstrokes. That's why I think as we progress through these episodes where we cover Essential Trek Philosophy, I find myself a little more attracted to some of these tangential topics, like the concept of ennui or boredom or everydayness, existential angst in Night. I just find that such an interesting diversion from these, frankly, kind of run-of-the-mill ethical dilemmas that are the same, that are essentially repeats of the same, you know, structure of ethical dilemma from episode to episode to episode inside these moral dilemma episodes of Star Trek. So I, in order to avoid boredom with that, with those kinds of dilemmas, I focused on the boredom in Night instead this time.
Which brings me to my next pick.
And whatever.
I will offer up my next pick, the episode Think Tank. And I have another confession to make.
My confession is I find that episode boring.
I do as well. I don't like this episode. And I told you in the turbo lift before we began that I had at least one pick on my list that I didn't like. I don't like this episode. I absolutely loathe Jason Alexander in this episode.
As much as I like him as an actor, I can't stand his character in this episode.
Something Kuros, about yes. it doesn't.
Yeah, and maybe that's to his credit. Like, he was trying to portray a swarmy little character, and he did.
But here's what I find fascinating. You talked about these kind of tangential episodes, and this is one of those, I think. The fascinating thing for me within Think Tank is this idea, now, besides the fact that there's a lot of really kind of interesting conversations that kind of circulate around this idea of problem solving and logic, which I find really interesting. And again, I agree with you totally wholeheartedly. It is a boring episode. The characterization of Kuros by Jason Alexander, he comes off as creepy and weird, but there's some really interesting concepts. Purely, it's the concepts within this episode that I just had to put it on my list. And that is this idea of problem solving and logic. But the twist in this episode is that this think tank that we see portrayed here, they create the problems that they're trying to solve. oftentimes.
Isn't that the way real think tanks work in the real world, right? They invent a problem only to, you know, justify getting paid to try to solve it.
And I find that incredibly fascinating. I do find that incredibly fascinating. And for Kuros, the payment that he wants from Janeway in order to solve her problem with these bounty hunters is 7 of 9. And again, that is an interesting little philosophical thread there, that we are talking about using people as payment. I thought that was really interesting. Of all the things that he could ask for, I was just totally shocked. You know, we talked about the episode of Enterprise in which, you know, this mechanized repair center actually takes Ensign Mayweather as payment, if you will, to make repairs on Enterprise. And this is kind of similar, although not as underhanded. Kuros has just outright asked for her. He wants her to stay, and that would be his payment for offering a solution to the problem with the Hazari, these bounty hunters that are after Voyager.
Well, treating another person as a form of payment reveals immediately the type of character that you're dealing with, right? it casts his character as a type of bad character, right? So it's done to great effect. It's part of the reason we hate the character so much, probably. I am really fascinated by this idea of a think tank creating and solving problems, because I think this happens a lot in the business world. I think, you know, some person with influence will say, here is a new problem I have identified for all of us to solve, and it's very important that we address this problem. So continue to fund us, or continue to pay us, or continue to justify our team's existence, or whatever, all for the sake of solving this problem that has been kind of drummed up or invented or maybe created ad hoc. And I think this happens a lot. There's so much busy work around solving problems, and they may or may not be genuine problems. They may or may not be artificially created or artificially drummed up. It's hard to know whether you're getting at a real genuine problem or a problem that has been motivated by these less pure factors.
Zachary, it's fascinating to me. I served as an advisor to a think tank. I'm not at liberty to discuss the problem that they were trying to solve. I can say that it was a legitimate conundrum that exists in our own world today here in the United States. I provided them information about a particular industry that they were trying to solve problems in that was related to my own background. And
who did they want to keep for payment?
They did not ask for my immortal soul, that's for sure. But, you know, I have to say that this idea of think tanks, it's interesting to me because they do exist. In fact, I think that they are much more involved in the decision-making that goes on, certainly in the corporate world, and I believe within our own government, than probably what we realize. And unfortunately, I think, again, art imitates life here in the Star Trek universe. I'm not saying that all of these think tanks are underhanded in the way they do things.
Oh, no. But people really are motivated to solve problems.
Yeah, but I do think that there are think tanks out there that create problems to solve problems so they can get paid. And, you know, certainly...
It's like Sisyphus pushing his rock up a hill.
Yeah, exactly.
Over and over again. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now I'm thinking we should start our own think tank. We got to get in on this racket.
Well, what problem can we create that only we have the solution to?
I don't know. We'll keep putting our heads together on that one. We'll think tank about the think tank.
But again, I hate this episode. There's a boringness to it. Jason Alexander's portrayal inside this episode of Kuros is weird and creepy. But I just for me, I could not deny the interesting kind of philosophical bent that this episode has and what's going on within the episode, and its interesting exploration of problem solving and logic. And
I do find the connection to the business world interesting, because I think there is a type of middle manager in the business world that needs to justify their positions, because if you're a middle manager, you're not doing the actual hands-on work day in, day out that generates the revenue that the company makes. You have to manage something, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a danger of being viewed as non-essential if you're not doing the hands-on work. So in order to justify having that middle manager position, you have to have something to manage. And one of the best ways to have something to manage is to identify a problem and think and convince everyone else you have the solution to it. So I do think there's a lot of artificial problem creation slash solving that happens at the middle management level in the business world.
And I have to say, just strictly from a storytelling standpoint, I love how Janeway is able to turn the tables on Kuros and the think tank, and she kind of outthinks the think tank. I do appreciate that towards the end of the episode. It's actually, as far as the story itself, it's one of the more interesting things in the story. But again, for me, it's this whole idea of problem solving and logic and the think tank and this idea of using inappropriate objects, in this case, a person, as payment. And again, I think that there are business dealings that go on in our own world in which the payment is probably something that most people would the exchange of favors in our government. I'm just going to come right out and say it. I think a lot of things happen in our government through the exchange of favors, and some of those favors I think are just detestable things that get traded in order to move the wheels of government. And I think this episode for me just really drums some of those things up and really causes me to really raises some questions in my own mind about the nature of how the wheels of our own world turn.
Well, look at how much of the 20th century was shaped by the think tank approach. The think tank approach is get the bright minds together, put them in a room, isolate them, and let them work at a problem, right? I mean, this is like the Einsteins and the Oppenheimers, right? You put the smart people, if you need to invent an atomic bomb, you put mm-hmm. the smart people who know something about it together in a room and let them chip away at the problem until they get the job done. That shaped our entire 20th century, that approach of taking the brightest minds in whatever field, science or medicine or whatever, and isolated them. And this has been done in a very active way. Like, you're isolated. You're under top secret orders. You don't get to communicate with the outside world about what you're doing. You're isolated. It's slightly different than the modern sense of a think tank, I think, you know, in mm-hmm. this political sense where we're solving political problems. But take the best and the brightest, isolate them, and let them solve a problem. Now, the brute force reality is that is a very effective way to solve a problem. Right? It got the atomic bomb invented, and it hasn't resulted in a great many things that we experienced in the 20th century that we think of as crucial events of our world's history now. And I still think it's a great way to work, right? If you want to get something accomplished, take the two or three or four people who are the best and most qualified to think about the issues involved, put them together, isolate them, don't be a distraction to them, and let them do their thing, and they will solve the problem eventually in all likelihood. Yeah. So it is an incredibly effective way if you're solving to solve a practical problem.
So Zachary, knowing that each of us had three essential picks, we have come to the end of our main lists, and we each have at least one. I've got two honorable mentions.
I have one.
I thought we would just lightning round those real quick.
Okay, so my one honorable mention is Equinox Part 1. And again, largely because it's a different variety on the same moral dilemma. Is it okay to harm other beings for the benefit of yourself? And in this case, we get to see Captain Ransom of the Equinox going down the slippery slope path of sacrificing the lives of these alien beings that are sufficiently different from human beings where they've depersonalized the entire situation, all for the sake of generating a new power source, fuel source, so they can mm-hmm. get home a little faster. It's a pretty terrible moral decision. What I find fascinating about this variety of it is the slippery slope aspect, that it all started out very innocently, right? This being that they didn't understand materialized on the bridge, and it died, and then they figured out they could turn it into a power source, and that led to proactively killing the rest of these life forms, you know, a form of murder for the sake of, you know, continuing to generate this extra power source. But it didn't start out that way. And like a great many moral tragedies, you know, it all started out so innocently, but led to very terrible things. And I think that's just a sad fact of reality, that things that seem like innocent first steps can turn into terrible things when they are extended to their quote-unquote logical conclusion. So I like that aspect of this, and I think that provides a unique flavor of this type of moral dilemma. And it's the same basic moral dilemma. Is it okay to harm some other beings for the sake of benefit of some different beings?
Sure.
It's very similar to any of the ethical dilemmas we've talked about in this episode of Metatrex and many other episodes of Metatrex. But, my own experience bears this out. Yours probably does too, that some first steps that seem very innocent and seem like the right thing to do can very quickly turn into a slippery slope to a dangerous path.
Yeah. Well, Zachary, I have two honorable mentions. My first honorable mention is the episode Latent Image. This, of course, is the episode in which the Doctor starts to experience memories after he becomes suspicious that his program has been altered in some way. And we find out within the episode that it has indeed been altered. And that person who ordered the alteration to his program was none other than Captain Janeway. It happened after he experienced a breakdown of sorts because of a difficult decision that he made to save the life of Harry Kim as opposed to another crewman. And dealing with that and struggling with that and coming to terms with that, he suffers a breakdown. So they wipe his programming and they erase the memory of this in order to repair him. And inside the episode, they wrestle with the nature of the Doctor himself. Is he a tool? Is he a program? Or is he, in fact, a person? And I really love how that is debated and played out within the episode. I think they do that brilliantly. It's very similar to other episodes that we see that concern Data and, for that matter, other debates that they've had about the Doctor. But here we get to see something really interesting done in that debate, and that's what to do when things go wrong. And I love the end of the episode, how Janeway is sitting with him in a room, just being there for him.
And, reading La Vita Nuova from Dante, if memory serves.
Yes, reading Dante, absolutely.
You know, Mike, one of my favorite parts of that episode is the speech that the Doctor gives about everything being a consequence of the primordial atom as a result of the Big Bang. I'm going to read the quote because it's so amazingly well written. It says, "The primordial atom burst, sending out its radiation, setting everything in motion. One particle collides with another, gases expand, planets contract, and before you know it, we've got starships and holodecks and chicken soup. In fact, you can't help but have starships and holodecks and chicken soup because it was all determined 20 billion years ago." What better statement of determinism is there? I mean, and the nature of making choices and the philosophical dilemma about whether there's genuine free will, whether all our choices are fated based on the, you know, he draws it all the way back to the Big Bang. But what an amazing speech about, you know, about the nature of choice and determinism.
Yeah, Zachary, this episode is so rich with dialogue, not only just this continual reflection on determinism versus free will, and but also the nature of human beings and life, and
you can see the Doctor trying to, you know, in the middle of this kind of identity crisis where he's having this breakdown, you can see him trying to reason away having to take responsibility for the choice he had to make, right? It's like, oh, well, it wasn't my responsibility because all my choices were fated based on the origin of the universe, right?
Yeah.
That's one path out of this dilemma that he's wrapped himself into, right? You know, he's like, well, I'm not responsible for that choice because, you know, no one has any genuine choice because it's all fated. That's one way out of that dilemma. It's fun to see the Doctor kind of spin his wheels on the various ways to avoid having to take responsibility for what is essentially, at brute force, a choice. Like, you have two patients, not both can live, they have an equal chance of survival. If you don't take action, they're both going to die, so you have to pick one. Go yeah. left or go right. There's no logical way out of that conundrum. It's a matter of making a personal choice. and you can see the Doctor wrestling with that choice and the fact that there were life and death consequences. And he doesn't want to have to take responsibility for the death of the crew member that died.
He says, causality, probability for every action. There's an infinite number of reactions, and in each one of them, I killed her, or did I? And wow, I mean, what an exploration of this concept. And, you know, when we talk about this kind of debate that they have about the Doctor himself, Janeway and Seven of Nine have this conversation, and Janeway says, you know, hey, he's more like that replicator over there than he is like us. And, you know, Seven says, I think he would disagree. So they're really two really great explorations inside this episode. Honestly, it probably should have been on my main list, but I left it off and I kept it as an honorable mention. But this is a great, great episode that I think definitely deserves to be
there. It's a tour de force of acting from Robert Picardo. I'm looking at the transcript right now, and there are so many lines that the Doctor has in this episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's talk the entire episode, and it's all Bob Picardo being an amazing actor.
Yeah, he really gives a great performance in this episode.
But I think all of our choices are like that. Every time we make a decision that leads to a bad consequence, our psychological reaction, I think, is to avoid taking responsibility for it. And that's what's going on here. The Doctor made a decision that he had to make. There was no avoiding making a decision. You know, choose one person over the other. Does one person live or the other person die? And, you know, that led to a bad consequence that he doesn't want to take responsibility for. And every time one of us makes a decision that leads to a bad consequence, I think our innate reaction is to go, oh, that wasn't my fault. Of course I had to make that decision because blah, 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 blah. And we do the same kind of internal head spinning that the Doctor is doing outwardly in this episode.
Well, and I think one of the things that really makes this so brilliant, and I keep mentioning this, you know, this regurgitated problem throughout the season, we see it really again here, but the interesting thing about this is that it's the Doctor. This is a piece of technology, really, in essence, Zachary, that is wrestling with the nature of causality and probability and determinism. And it's fascinating because he can have a breakdown about something that oftentimes we as flesh and blood human beings take for granted.
You know, what I love about the choice that the Doctor has to make in this episode is sometimes you don't have enough information to make a decision, right? You have to make a decision and you don't have all the information. Each option seems, you know, plausibly good, and you have to decide. And you know, they've kind of boiled that situation down to its essence in this episode. It's literally life or death. There's literally two people. You can't save both. They've kind of, you know, taken that concept and distilled it down into a microcosm for the Doctor in this episode. But I think a lot of choices in life are like that. You don't know all the consequences, and you don't know all the facts. You know, whether it's like a good example might be, you know, which college should I go to or which grad school mm-hmm. should I apply to? It's like, well, you know, they're all kind of the same when it comes right down to it, right? You just have to pick one, and you don't know what the consequences are going to be, and you don't really know all the factors that are involved. But if you don't start taking some action, you'll never get there. So you just start acting. And I think just a lot of life choices are like that. You know, we just are forced to make decisions without all of the facts.
So that's Latent Image. My other honorable mention, for no real deep reason, is the episode 1159. And I know that episode is not necessarily a fan favorite, but I have to say that, as you and I have mentioned many times on this podcast, that we are both lovers of genealogy and doing our own family histories and research. And this episode really kind of encapsulates that discovery of, you know, trying to figure out your roots and where you come from. Janeway has been inspired and is most proud of an ancestor of hers, Shannon O'Donnell. And she celebrates her by saying that she is really the inspiration for her joining Starfleet. But she discovers that Shannon O'Donnell was not quite the person she believed her to be. And she finds herself a little disappointed in the episode. And she is contemplating that. And in so doing, I think it's implied that maybe to some degree she is once again kind of drudging up her own life choices and decisions and you know, perhaps once again mulling over whether or not she should have destroyed that array that stranded her crew in the Delta Quadrant. But, you know, it gets me thinking every time I watch it about my own discovery of my past. You know, I was always told that, you know, my family had a rich Irish heritage. And in studying my genealogy, I found that that wasn't necessarily the truth. In fact, I'm more Scottish than Irish. And, you know, does that make me a different person than what I believe myself to be? I could sit here and really ponder, you know, my own personal nature based on my history. But Janeway, at the end of the episode, is surrounded by her crew, and they point out to her, rightly so, that, you know, regardless of whether Shannon O'Donnell was everything that Janeway believed her to be, she still inspired her to be the woman she is, and that in and of itself is quite an accomplishment. I love that, the nostalgia of this episode and that idea of self-discovery, and what does it mean? And I think that's just, isn't that the discovery that we're all on? Where did we come from? What does that mean for us now? How does that affect who we become and where we're going? You know, and I just find it fascinating. So for that reason alone, not for any really deep philosophical reason, but just the nostalgia of the episode and this idea of personal discovery by looking at history, I had to include it as an honorable mention.
So there are two things I really like about 1159. One is the thing you've already mentioned, the genealogy connection. You know, I find it fulfilling to spend time kind of learning about the people that came before me. And I hope they would find it interesting that, you know, that one of my ancestors, you know, 100, 200, 300 plus years ago, that one of their descendants would find them interesting enough that they would still be relevant and interesting and someone would take the time to think about them hundreds of years after the fact. I think that is a testament to the lives of the people that came before us, because it's easy to forget that these were real people, right? I mean, we didn't used to be here and the world used to be theirs and they were living and breathing just like we are. Mm-hmm. And we forget that sometimes. It's interesting to put ourselves back in their mindset and realize that the world was theirs and all of the dilemmas that they faced and challenges they overcame, those were as meaningful to them as our dilemmas and our situations are to us here today. And I hope that in 100 years or 200 years or 300 years, someone still finds me interesting. Maybe they'll be listening to Metatrix, like, wow, in 200 years, someone might be listening to this podcast. What a cool idea that is. So that's one thing, the genealogical connection, and that's meaningful to you and meaningful for me. And we've talked about that before on Metatrex. But I think another thing that's interesting, it's related, but it's the juxtaposition of the past and the future in this episode. Mm. Because you can, I mean, we all know people like this, people who are so stuck in the past that they can't see the future, right? And we know people that are so obsessed with the future, so forward-looking that they forget the best of what came before them. They forget their history, their heritage. And we get to see an interesting juxtaposition of the two. Like, there's the world that we see depicted in this episode is on the cusp of change, right? The Millennium Gate is the new is the way of the future in this episode. It's, you know, paving the path to the first Martian missions and whatnot, right? So it's clear that the world we're seeing in this episode is a world of transition, and they're headed into the future, what will become what we see in the Star Trek universe as the future. But they haven't got there yet, and it takes brave people who are willing to plow forward and build the future to make that happen. But that can be threatening for people who are resistant to change. And Henry Janeway in this episode is resistant to change. He is I want to say he's backward-minded. That's not the right way to characterize it. He's nostalgic about the past. He sees the value of the things that came before him, so much so that any novelty is a threat or something to resist or push back against. And mm-hmm. he is, you know, literally stopping the future from coming into being in this episode, right? He's the one who's holding up the show and preventing the Millennium Gate from being built. And I think it's really sad sometimes when people view the future as a threat or change as a threat. It's important, I think, just generally to find a middle ground between recognizing the best of what came before us, but also recognizing the failures and the limitations of what came before us and being forward-looking about what the future could be and what we want it to be and what it could be someday if we work really hard at it, but not doing so with such gusto that we forget all the lessons of the past. And there's just an Aristotelian middle ground you have to find there between respecting and remembering the things that came before you, learning the values and lessons of what came before you, not forgetting about those, embracing them, maybe even making them part of your identity, like Henry Janeway does in this episode, like you and I do with our genealogy, mm-hmm. but not being so stuck in that mindset that we don't see future possibilities and the great things that could be in the world if we all collectively work hard at it. And so I just like this juxtaposition of the past and the future. And I think we both know people who are living in one side of that dilemma versus the other. And it's much more coherent to find a good, healthy middle ground about, you know, making the past part of your identity, but not being bound or constrained by that past, and constantly looking forward into making improvements in the future. And frankly, just building the world that we want to see. Like, I feel like we have a lot of power and free will to make the world in our own image to some degree. So why not look to the future and see what are the possibilities? What could we make it? But if you do that to the detriment of learning the lessons from the past, then you are, I'd say, just as bad as being stuck in the past.
Sure. Well said. Well said. Well, Zachary, I really don't have anything more to say about the fifth season of Voyager other than what I've already said. We'll recap our list of season five essentials from Star Trek Voyager in a moment. But I will say that there are some really great episodes in this season that weren't on the list, but I think we've got a really interesting, and what I find really interesting is that by my count, you and I have nothing on our lists that are...
Well, usually we at least have a little bit of overlap.
Yeah, there's usually one or two episodes, and occasionally we've had more, but you and I had two completely different lists this time, and I find that in and of itself fascinating.
Even our honorable mentions didn't overlap this time.
So. Yes, I find that in and of itself.
Which means it must be that our philosophical intuitions are not as similar as we've led people to believe.
Any other final thoughts before I recap the picks that we have?
No, just that this is a great season of Voyager. It's not, I would say, again, not the most philosophically rich. I had a fairly short list of episodes, honestly. But it is one of my favorite seasons of Voyager. I go back to it again and again. I love most of the episodes in this season. I think in terms of key takeaways for me, the two episodes that really matter the most to me that were on my short list are Night, because I think this mode of dwelling in our everydayness is something we tend to distract ourselves from. And I think we lose something about the human experience when we distract ourselves from the everydayness and ennui and boredom of life too much. It's important to find that time for reflection. So I think in our busy modern world, there's an important lesson to be learned from the episode Night. And in general, I think the most essential episode of Essential Trek Philosophy here in season five of Voyager is Nothing Human. It's the most concise encapsulation of all the issues related to medical ethics and scientific research that you'll find pretty much in all of Star Trek, I think. So it's really essential Trek philosophy. So the other episodes are great and important and interesting, but those are my two essential picks.
I couldn't agree more. So to recap our Essential Trek Philosophy list, we have Night, Timeless, Drone, 30 Days, Nothing Human, Think Tank, Equinox Part 1, Latent Image, and 1159. And that, listeners, is Essential Trek Philosophy from Star Trek Voyager Season 5. That's quite a list, Zachary.
It is. I'm actually really pleased that we had different picks, because I was worried my list was a little too short for this episode. So I'm glad you filled in the gaps for me.
And I have to say that really for the first time, you and I have really disagreed about a season of Star Trek. You find this to be one of the best. I not so much. But again, there are some great episodes within this season. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Nothing Human really goes at the top of the list as far as interesting philosophical episodes. I probably should put Latent Image up on my main list, because for me, it's one of those episodes I think that definitely deserves to be on here. I pushed it down to honorable mention in lieu of a couple of other episodes. But again, I think we chew on essentially a lot of the same dilemmas over and over and over again throughout this season. And some of the episodes did a better job than others. And, we have a great list for our listeners to digest and consider as they are doing their Star Trek rewatches.
Yeah. as a final thought, you know what I love about Latent Image? I love the fact that the Doctor manages to outwardly express all of the internal narrative we have when we're faced with a dilemma internally. Oftentimes we're wrestling and we have this internal voice in our head that's not quite coherent and maybe sounds a little crazy if you took the transcript of what goes on inside your head and made it external, right? But we get to see the Doctor acting out that entire internal monologue in this episode of Voyager, and it's an amazing tour de force of acting. But it really is crazy because sometimes I think our internal thoughts are like this. When you're faced with a dilemma, you haven't wrestled with it yet. You haven't figured out the answer. You're tossing things out. It's not coherent yet. And if you took a transcript of that, it would sound as crazy as the Doctor sounds, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I come back to this episode more times than I care to mention. It's one of my favorite Voyager episodes, as is Nothing Human. And I think it definitely deserves more than honorable mention, but where it ended up on my list.
But that episode is so chaotic, and I find that after watching it, I'm craving a little peace and quiet, a little headspace. Like, I want time in my quarters with my replicated curtains closed. I want a little bergamot tea. So I'm going to be like Neelix and go hide in my quarters and try to push out the existential dread of all of these dilemmas after we're done recording. But in the meantime, it's been fun talking about essential Trek philosophy from Season 5 of Star Trek Voyager. But this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere around the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Star Trek 3 was really good, but man, that bridge was cheap.
That set.
That set was horrible.
Maybe they had a deal. Maybe Shatter into this VIC-20 commercial in the game. Some Commodores for the bridge. They're like, oh, we got you covered, man. So.
Yeah, because when it said good morning, Captain, it looked a lot like the graphics we just witnessed on the Commodore.
The 602 Club.
As I mentioned previously, completely blind and not having known this history about him wanting to do a Tolkien-like world, I didn't get that at all. I mean, that's just, nope.
Continuing mission.
Is a lot of fun. And I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to get back into there, I'm going to make it something that everybody has always wanted to find out and see. Who would win if Kirk took on Picard? And not, let's just up the game a little bit. Let's throw in Janeway. Let's throw in Sisko. Hey, let's throw in Captain Pike.
Why not?
And introducing The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome to The Edge, Trek FM's brand new podcast where we dive into the final frontier of the newest Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery, the first Star Trek series to be on air in 12 and a half years, something like that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on the iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party podcast apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is in the Babel Conference, our listeners-only discussion group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select MetaTreks. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, Mike, when you're not busy submitting payment for Think Tank services rendered, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, Zachary, you can find me on Facebook. That's where I'm most active. I'm always glad to talk Star Trek and philosophy in the Babel Conference on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @cmichael1701. I'm also occasionally on Instagram, cmichael1701, and you're always welcome to stop by and read my blog about my journey to publish my novel and a little bit about life. You can find that at cmichael1701.wordpress.com. And Zachary, when you are sitting in the dark corners of your quarters sipping bergamot tea, where can our listeners find you around the network?
Well, speaking of Star Trek Voyager today, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of To the Journey, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Voyager, along with my two co-hosts over there, Kay Shaw and Suzanne Williamson. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Star Trek and philosophy with me there, and you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of time and money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. We'd also like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the Metatrex team from around the network. Specifically, we'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, the head of our think tank, we might add. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Che Mutala, our Patreon manager. And a special thank you and a shout out to our three associate producers here on Metatrex. We'd like to thank Patrick Devlin. You can find him under the Twitter handle at MagicDrop5. Kay Shaw, my co-host over on To the Journey. You can find her under the handle at ChocoWeevil. And Norman Lau. You can find Norm under the Twitter handle at Starfighter1701. And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. And check out audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Well, everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of Metatrex, a Star Trek and philosophy podcast. Until next time, when we will once again boldly go where no philosophers, or no think tank for that matter, have gone before.